Good morning and welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. On today's show, New Mexico's 30-day legislative session has just concluded. What passed, what didn't, and why? There's no one better to ask than the author of our state's go-to political blog, New Mexico Politics with Joe Monahan. Joe Monahan, welcome back to the program.
Always good to be with you, Stephen. Look forward to it.
Joe, this was a busy 30-day session, particularly at the end. We have a historic $8.5 billion budget. An agreement was also reached on finally capping payday loan interest at 36%. There was also agreement on a crime and a tax cut package. I want to quickly get to the specifics on those, but let's start with your overall take on the session and its significance. What do you make of it?
Well, I think it was a mixed bag. The session got a little bogged down because the 30-day session is meant to discuss primarily the budget and financial affairs, but it really got broadened out. This being an election year, the governor and some of the legislators did add more stuff to the agenda than we anticipated. Some of it passed, some of it didn't, but I'd give the legislative session probably a C+ or a B-. I think they could have done a little bit more with some issues, but overall, they did their primary task, which, as you said, was formulating a budget, historic levels due to the oil and gas boom.
There was that sad ending, too, with Georgine Lewis's DWI arrest.
Yeah, that was very disturbing to New Mexico voters. They don't like that stuff. We've had two previous legislators in the last couple of years charged with aggravated DWI. Both lost their seats. That will probably be the fate of Albuquerque's Georgine Lewis, who was arrested on Super Bowl Sunday night for aggravated DWI. Kind of a shocker there for the session and disappointing. But the work goes on and it must go on.
So let's go to something positive, and that's the cap on the payday loan interest. It was 175% per annum cap. It was lowered to 36% cap. And actually, the 175% cap was much higher than that because the whole business was to roll over the loans. And so people would pay much more than 175% interest. Every good government group in New Mexico was for capping it. But this thing has been around for 10 years and it never passed. So what changed?
Well, the legislative process is that way. Oftentimes, it takes years of knocking on the door before it gets opened. For example, remember cockfighting in New Mexico, which was super controversial. It took years to get rid of that. The death penalty repeal was a common goal that took a long time. Repealing the tax on food, these big measures are difficult to get through. The constitutional amendment to allow for early childhood will be on the ballot in November of this year, but that's only after 10 years of getting the legislature to put it there. And now we come to payday loans, which is a big victory for a lot of the groups advocating for this rollback. The lobbyists of the payday loan industry are some of the best in the business. Last session, they thwarted the move. This time, they finally lost. And again, as you said, this was after many attempts. So this was a big victory for a lot of citizens of New Mexico who are dependent on these payday loans to get from month-to-month rent payments, for example. The payday loan industry continued to argue that it would leave the state, that it wasn't going to be around if this was passed. We doubt that. Other states have lowered the rate and they still have the loans. And they said that the credit unions should step up after testifying in favor of lowering the rate. And we'll see if that happens too, if the credit unions step into the breach. But this was a big victory, and it came in a very difficult environment for working class people. This COVID epidemic has really hurt the lower income people of color more than anybody else. We all know that. They don't have the big government jobs or the school system jobs. They have working jobs as clerks, as service industry, et cetera. And they have been hit hard because of this epidemic. And this payday loan for them comes in that environment. And I think their suffering, their problems had a lot to do with it finally passing.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because at the start of the session, it wasn't even on the call. So it didn't even look like it was authorized. And yet there was still all this public pressure. I think Mylon Simonich was writing a column every few days about it. And according to him, the big change was Brian Egoff, the Speaker of the House, actually getting behind it and pushing it, whereas last session he didn't. What do you make of that? Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. Now, the governor did not put it on her call. She was asked to several times, but deferred and did not want it on there as it was presently constructed, saying it wasn't ready. But during the session, as the bill progressed, she changed her mind and placed it on her call. So she was kind of catching up with the caboose, so chasing the caboose, and got on board there at the end. But yeah, Egoff finally did move the needle on it, I think. And then later, of course, at the end of the session, he announces his resignation, not resignation, but his decision to leave the legislature and not seek election again, therefore giving up the speakership. And you got to wonder if he was looking at that from a legacy standpoint, that, hey, this will be a major accomplishment for me as the Speaker of the House of Representatives. And maybe if I someday run for political office, it will be also useful in that context.
So, and actually on that topic, I just kind of wonder also about his killing the hydrogen hub bill. I mean, this was a big proposal by the governor, and he killed it twice, wouldn't let it go forward. And I'm wondering if you see that also as a legacy effort on his part.
I see that more as, you know, a lot of pressure from a core base group of Democratic politics, which is the environmental groups. And a lot of them are from out of state, have a lot of money, give a lot of money to political campaigns. The environmental movement here is very strong. We saw that a year or two ago with the Energy Transition Act, and we saw it again. They hated this bill. They thought it was a backdoor entry into more fossil fuel exploitation because hydrogen hubs use natural gas, for example, and it's not a clean industry to them, a clean fuel.
Their argument is that the production of it is so dirty that the fact that hydrogen itself is clean makes no difference.
The governor has announced a collaboration with the governors of regional states such as Utah to continue to pursue hydrogen hubs with federal grant funding. So she has been really pushing hard on it, despite the overwhelming opposition in the environmental groups, which have supported her in the past. So it's been interesting to see her side with the fossil fuel industry here, in a sense. There are a lot of environmentalists who do support hydrogen hub, but the governor's push on it was intense, and she suffered a defeat for it.
So let's move to the primary task of the legislature in a 30-day session. That's the budget. And there were a couple big wins for the governor, I think, in the budget context. She'd been pushing for years for salary increases for teachers, and they got $10,000 increases at each level, which is going to put teachers on a comparable pay to surrounding states and really pretty good nationally. And she also got the Opportunity Scholarship, which with a lottery scholarship puts New Mexico in kind of rarefied condition at a top of a list that's a good list. So what do you make of those?
I thought those were definitely wins for the governor. Her banner legislation was these teacher pay increases, as you said, adjusting the tiers upward and then giving 7% pay raises on top of it, which makes New Mexico one of the better paid places to be a teacher. And hey, you don't hear New Mexico being better paid in hardly any categories. It's just always been a low wage state. So this was big. And again, I go back to the pandemic. I mean, even the Republicans saw the problem, and they're very conservative about pay raises. But the shortage of teachers that was exacerbated by the pandemic is so noticeable in all sections of the state, Republican, Democratic, Independent, what have you, that I think this one was kind of easy to push over the plate. The opportunity scholarships have been resisted somewhat. I forget what the appropriation on that was, Stephen. I think it might have come down a little from what she wanted. But again, that speaks to the payday loan situation in a way, too, that people are struggling to pay for basic things in life. A lot of people in the lower to middle income brackets, and now even the higher income brackets as inflation starts to rage. So I think the times really help push these measures through that we were discussing.
So I want to talk to you just a little bit more about the budget, but before I do so, let me mention this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. On the phone with me is Joe Monahan. He is the author of New Mexico Politics with Joe Monahan. It's the go-to political blog. And Joe, I noted with interest your blog. You quoted Senator Munoz, who's the chair of Senate Finance. And you quoted him saying something like, "We have more money than we know what to do with." And when I look at what state agencies are saying, I'm not sure that's true. Before the session started, John D'Antonio, the state engineer, respected guy, resigned because he had been forced to submit a flat budget. He said he couldn't do the agency job. Just recently, the PRC has said it doesn't have enough staff and can't do a competent job. The new cannabis agency says we can't handle all the applications because we begged the legislature for money and they didn't give it to us and we're short-staffed. So do you think it's the case that the legislature is actually doing an adequate job of funding the state agencies? Does the state actually have more money than it knows what to do with?
Well, maybe it has more money than Senator Munoz knows what to do with and some of the more conservative Democrats. But you're right, there are still funding gaps. Some would say CYFD overseeing the child abuse situation.
Yeah, their case more money. Is very high, right?
Yeah. You know, look, at there are still gaps there that they've got to be filled. But obviously, they filled this one with the teachers, didn't they? With this big, historic 7% increase in adjustment in the tiers. But they didn't get to all of them. And I think that they eventually will start feeling more pressure as these gaps show themselves in public perceptions and public impact. You know, the problem here is that not a lack of money, obviously. The problem is the money may get even bigger. As we speak, oil, because of the Ukrainian situation, is headed towards $100 a barrel. This is going to create huge increases in money if the price stays anywhere near that level for any period of time. So you're going to be possibly repeating these multi-billion dollar surpluses. And the state is saving an immense amount of this surplus in anticipation of the next downturn. But it's going to be a debate if we're oversaving and not using the money, as you pointed out, for some of these areas of the state engineer's office, what have you, and not plugging the gaps and also not taking more risk on measures to try to solve some of these drug addiction, behavioral health problems, and other social issues that haunt the state. This brings up the notion of a full-time legislature or something, or more leadership out of the executive branch to put this immense wealth to use rather than just, you know, saying, well, let's build roads and bridges and have very high reserve levels. So we have a reserve level now of about 30% of the general fund budget, plus billions in other savings type funds.
So, you know, I want to only talk to you about that. That's a huge, the amount of the reserve, the budget reserve is 30%. It's almost $3 billion. That is a significant amount of money. New Mexico's economy is under $100 billion. Does it actually make any sense? I mean, what is the... A couple of years ago, you did a drive down to the Permian Basin, and you took a look at what's going on down there. And there's been a big change, right? You've got the majors down there. The wildcatters are gone. It seems to me like the chances of plugging all these wells when oil prices go down are virtually diminished. And that's the big rationale for all this savings.
Yeah, that there's going to be another crash and we're going to have to plug the budget like we have in past years. No doubt there will be another crash. What's changed is the relative stability of the Permian Basin. By that, I mean that the oil companies can produce energy down there cheaper than just about anywhere else. And that keeps those fields going even in times of low oil prices. So that's the difference, which means the Santa Fe is going to have to adjust to that new reality. If it means when the oil price goes down, the hit is not as intense as it has been in the past. Now, if you really overspend and, you know, don't have any reserves or whatever, even a small decrease in the price of oil will have an impact. But again, the stability of that area and in the future years because of the new technology and the attractiveness of it to the major oil companies is a factor the legislature needs to be paying attention to.
So the other side of that equation also puzzles me because the whole idea has been we need to diversify and expand our economy. But if you spend the $3 billion, basically you're increasing aggregate demand in areas unrelated to oil and gas. You are expanding the economy and diversifying the economy, what you say you're doing. If you don't do it, you have actually increased reliance on oil and gas. So it seems to me that no matter how you look at it, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And, you know, one interesting thing about this, Joe, is because I tried to look at the LFC reports. The LFC reports on almost every aspect of the legislature, but it doesn't address this at all, whether it makes sense to have a $3 billion reserve. It's kind of strange.
Well, they address it in the sense that they say, well, we've had past downturns and we've had to raid the cupboard to balance the budget because we overspent during the times of plenty. So there's a rationale for a high
reserve. But there's no staff analysis.
No, it's just taken as axiomatic, as a given. Exactly. And you're right. And we're analyzing it from a different perspective, which is, as we previously mentioned, perhaps renewed stability in the oil fields and the crashes not being as severe. But we're also analyzing it from a different perspective, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to solve some problems that have bedeviled the state. And that's going to take a little bit of risk. And the LFC is a conservative institution, but around a long time. And they're not about to change their stripes. So there is a little bit of tug of war here about this surplus that I'm surprised hasn't developed more in this recent legislative session. The lack of ideas on the behavioral health problem. I mean, there
it's
was
shocking one because that was shocking. Decimated by Governor Martinez and that and really hasn't been corrected.
Yeah, I mean, Senator Ortiz Pino and a few others have proposed $100 million to rebuild and to advance it. You could use $400 or $500 million, other people said. I'm surprised that we're not getting more pressure to get this addiction problem treated, drug intervention, et cetera, Stephen, that is causing so much of the violence and criminal activity in the state. These are coming from people, obviously, you know, who are don't vote, too. You know, let's be pragmatic. You know, these people who are going into these addiction centers or are coming from low-income neighborhoods, I don't think there's enough pressure based on the population that's primarily affected. But that population is wreaking havoc, at least here in the city of Albuquerque, which was a big debate during this past session. And the fact that you can't get some of these people into addiction centers or treatment beds is kind of astounding when you have this kind of surplus. And I think that was the big failing, actually, of this legislative session. They just continue to avoid this elephant in the room. And as we speak, there's more murders, more mayhem, more situations that are upsetting the public.
You know, I want to transition to crime next, but actually this discussion, as you say, is very pertinent to it because, you know, I interviewed Chief Medina, the Albuquerque police chief. He said he would love to make more referrals to addiction treatment, but they don't exist. He said the same thing was true for the judiciary. They would like to make more referrals, but the programs don't exist. I did an interview with someone that talked about addiction treatment in prison. There's no program in our prison. So people go into these prisons addicted, and they come out of the prisons ready to get addicted again. I mean, if you really want to address crime, it seems to me that, as you say, this would be something that needs to be done.
Well, we have a tax in Bernalillo County that we passed a number of years ago that generates nearly $20 million a year for behavioral health. And I think that needs to be scrutinized more as to why we're still short. But we know we're still short as a result of this legislative session, which could have taken more sweeping transformational action in order to address it. And this was by far not a transformational session. That's the new adjective going around that this money could have financed. I mean, if you consider teacher pay raises transformational, you're probably a school teacher. I mean, people deserve a living salary. Is that going to change the level of education? There's no science or no proof of that. We did give the teachers a pay raise back in the early part of the century via a constitutional amendment. It was the right thing to do, in my opinion. They deserve a living wage, but it's not a magic wand. You've got to get in there and you have got to start new programs of intervention and expensive one-on-one education and devote more money into the trenches. And that's why we're looking forward to the constitutional amendment that would provide specific funding for very early childhood education if it passes in November.
Yeah, there's a lot of studies that say that works and is about the only thing that does work to make a difference in education. So, but what I'd like to do is talk to you next about crime. But before I do so, let me reintroduce you. My guest today is Joe Monahan. He is the author of the go-to political blog in New Mexico Politics with Joe Monahan. And Joe, the governor, came into the session with some crime proposals, two big ones. Changing preventive detention with a presumption of dangerousness for certain criminal charges. And a second one was 1,000 new policemen. She didn't get either one. And I think, you know, with an overwhelmingly Democratic legislature, that's kind of strange. I mean, we think Biden with a 50-50 federal Senate should get all his legislation passed. Here we have a governor in an overwhelmingly Democratic legislature, and they can't get something passed. What happened?
Well, I think it was a bridge too far. Remember, yes, we have a Democratic legislature, but the state house is quite progressive Democratic. The governor is not known as a progressive Democrat. In fact, her crime proposals were commented on by the Republicans, who said she sounds like a Republican. And that was the problem for a lot of Democrats. These were punitive measures that didn't get at the root cause that we were talking about, which is the behavioral health, the education. On the other hand, why didn't the progressives propose more in those areas? That was the disappointment, as we talked about earlier. But the preventative detention was ballyhooed by Mayor Keller, by Raul Torres, the district attorney, and those are card-carrying members of the progressive establishment. But they could not carry their grassroots across the finish line with these proposals because they were too out of ordinary for their progressive politics, in part. And also, well,
the LFC staff helped.
I was going to get to that. Then on the other end, the conservatives joined with the progressives via the Legislative Finance Committee, which said the problem isn't the pretrial detention. The problem is accountability, that the criminals don't feel that there's any fear of getting arrested. There's no accountability for committing criminal acts, and that means more police and more arrests and not these proposals that some felt were, or at least the pretrial was, an unconstitutional proposal. And she did get, I believe, $50 million for more police recruitment around the state. And so she didn't lose completely on that. And that will probably be a help for quite a few agencies in getting some more police officers. But this crime problem, in my opinion, and I think in the opinion of most people, the legislature goes back to behavioral health, the massive drug and alcohol addiction, the generational problem of crime. You know, pretrial detention, Stephen, is for violent repeat offenders. Okay, that's not really the problem. The problem in Albuquerque in particular is we are creating new criminals. These aren't repeat criminals. These are new drug dealers with fentanyl, et cetera, coming onto the into the marketplace to make money. So we've got to stop that first before we get into the, you know, the pretrial debate that fell flat at the roundhouse.
But as you said, the governor ended up doing okay with her crime package. She got this $50 million, which includes increased salaries plus retention bonuses. This is something the police departments have been asking for. They're going to give substantial retention bonuses every 5 years to keep police from resigning and going somewhere else. She also got 5 new crimes, and she got a elimination of the statute of limitations on second-degree murder. So there actually was a crime package that passed, but I think you've already really said this in essence, but I think it's sort of like education. I mean, you got the same people doing the same thing. Why is it going to change crime?
Yeah, I mean, there's been so many comments and proposals on my blog at joemonahan.com and other media outlets on how to solve this. I mean, it's not easy. It's happening, as the mayor says, in other cities. The pandemic has exacerbated it.
So the last big item on the agenda for this session was tax cuts. And at the start of the session, it seemed like the tax cut proposals were viewed as sort of crudely political. I mean, the basic tax cut proposal was 0.25% decrease in the gross receipts tax, which almost no one would even notice, let alone have much of an effect. But in the end, there was a tax cut package. What was the package and what did you make of it?
Well, Stephen, let me address that. It's such an excellent topic, really, you bring up here. I think one of the big failings of modern politics is the following. I'm a Democrat, and we don't want to cut taxes like ever. I'm a Republican, and we don't want to raise taxes ever. And
we like to cut them.
We like to cut them, no matter what the political environment. But it didn't used to be that way in New Mexico or America. There are obvious times in the economic cycle when you need to increase taxes and you need to cut taxes, right? You would think no. But in this case, obviously, this was a time to cut taxes. Whether you're a progressive or a conservative or whatever your political philosophy is, when you have this kind of immense wealth coming into a state of 2 billion people, they deserve to get some of that money back. It is their money being generated on their land. So to that end, most households, at least those making $75,000 or under in adjusted gross income, will get a $250 tax rebate later this year. The Social Security tax was also chopped. It was exempted from the state's personal income tax. Again, your income level, probably about $100,000, I believe you won't get that tax cut. Yeah, means tested, but you got Social Security tax cut, you got the personal, and you got the income tax rebates. And what else was it?
There was another child tax credit also.
There was a child tax credit. And then there was the quarter cent cut, as you mentioned, in the gross receipts tax, a tiny one, but maybe a start on tackling this problem we have with gross receipts being too dependent on it. You go up to Taos or some of these areas and the gross receipts tax is 9%. It doesn't make it very competitive for all these self-employed doctors, lawyers, engineers, et cetera, compared to Texas or other regional states. And we do need some tax reform. So while that was more of a symbolic effort, maybe a political gimmick, as the Republicans said, I thought it was significant, Stephen, in the sense that they actually did cut it. And that could set us up for a more robust and productive conversation about where we head in the future with that tax.
Yeah, you know, if you look at Realpolitik, the journal actually editorialized favorably on the substance of the session. And I think that brings up for me the big question for you, Joe, which is, how do you see the winners and losers from this session politically, not substantively, not what is right or wrong, but who came out ahead politically, Republicans, Democrats, incumbents, challengers? How do you see it?
It's a good question. It's a tough question, but I will say I saw some cracks in the uber progressive movement. And also the fact that the crime package did get a little bit of traction with some of the measures you mentioned tells me that we're headed into a little bit of pendulum swinging here towards a more centrist philosophy on certain issues, at least. And I think you saw that in the recent Albuquerque City Council election, where they picked up a couple of conservative seats in the Albuquerque School Board that really went conservative in the election. I think you saw it with the governor, who has just been, you know, pounded at the table over that crime bill. I think she's quite worried about crime becoming a big issue in Albuquerque and affecting her election. So in the broadest sense of it, I think that the more centrist, moderate elements of the Democratic Party probably came out a bit of a winner here. On the other hand, you know, the payday loan lending thing, the teacher pay raises hand at the progressives, a nice victory. So mixed bag would be my final analysis of it as to who won and lost.
We are going to have to leave it there. I would like to thank today's guest, Joe Monahan of New Mexico Politics with Joe Monahan. Thanks also to my producers, Elias Henley and Tristan Klum. The executive producer of this show is Lynn Chebecki. My name is Stephen Spitz, and you've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas on KUNM. Podcasts of this show are available wherever you get podcasts. Archives of past shows are at stephenspitz.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.